Welcome to Language Access is No Vitamin, an essential podcast for those shaping the future of healthcare in America. Let's transform our healthcare system from seeing language access as an optional vitamin to the cure of patient-centered care. Welcome to Language Access is No Vitamin. Empecemos. Hello, and welcome to Language Access is No Vitamin, the podcast where we unveil the intricacies of language access in healthcare. I'm Joanna Dudela, your host and the founder of Culturizing Access, your strategic partner for multilingual patient-centered care. Thank you for joining us today. Language access isn't just about converting words from one language to another. It's about understanding the cultural and contextual dimensions that often go unnoticed. Today, I'm joined by my producer, Alberto de Freitas, who will be managing the chat and all the background items. So feel free to send your comments throughout the podcast, and we will review it at the end. As someone who has navigated the challenges of being a limited English proficient individual, an interpreter, and healthcare provider, I've experienced firsthand the barriers and gaps in communication within the healthcare system. These experiences have ignited my passion to establish Culturizing Access, where our mission is to create connections, improve patient outcomes, enhance provider performance, reduce employee burnout, and ultimately ensure patient safety, all through the power of effective communication. In today's episode, we're going to explore why language access goes far beyond translation and why it's crucial for healthcare organizations to understand and embrace the cultural and contextual nuances. But let's start at the basics. Often the term interpreter and translator are used interchangeably, but they serve different roles in ensuring language access. And it's important to clarify these distinctions. An interpreter plays a pivotal role in facilitating real-time communication between individuals who speak different languages. Think of them as language bridges during medical consultations or discussions. They listen to what is being said in one language and convey it accurately into another, ensuring that both parties understand each other. On the other hand, a translator deals with the written content. They take documents, medical records, written materials, flyers in one language and provide a translated version in the language of the target. This is essential for ensuring that patients can read and comprehend essential information like consent forms, medication instruction, or medical histories. In other words, the interpreter translates messages from one language to another orally while the translator uses the written word. Both language professionals who bridge the gap in communication between parties, yet they are, in a way, completely different professions. Although there are interpreters who translate and vice versa, many do one thing or the other. The skills and tools are completely different. It's like an author or a writer, right? Being expected to be a public speaker or vice versa. Yes, they exist, but many times they're exclusive to one another. So yes, both the translator and the interpreter convey information between languages, but their skills and duties are different. So it's important to use correct terminology. And I know that many people use the terms interchangeably, but we're here to become better advocates for the communities who use language services. So it's important to use the correct terminology. And I invite you to not only use it, but also educate others around you. What you normally see at hospitals and healthcare organizations are interpreters, not translators. Now that we have clarified the basics, let's dive into what language access truly means. So at the core, language access is about breaking down communication barriers to ensure that every individual, regardless of their language proficiency, has equal access to information and services. True language access involves proactive efforts to eliminate language barriers and ensure that every step of the client's journey is inclusive. For example, it's not enough to have a stack of translated brochures in a waiting room if there's no interpreter available to explain the context or answer questions during the patient's visit. Or providing a phone interpreter when the patient sees the physician, but having the interpreter not being available during the check-in process and handing the patient a stack of forms in English with no translation, which the patient is unable to complete. So language access isn't just about complying with laws and regulations, which we'll explore in another episode, It's about embracing a philosophy of equitable care that recognizes diversity and respects the unique needs of every patient. True language access means thinking holistically about the patient's journey, from pre-appointment communications and registration to in-person consultation, follow-up instructions, and post-care feedback. To talk about the nuances of language access, I thought about a lot how we're going to explain them. And I decided to go through the patient journey, right? So that's how we're going to explore the nuances of language services today. We're going to visit the patient journey. And we'll do a walkthrough from all the barriers many of us have not even thought about many times. And let's start right at the beginning. Your website and making an appointment. So the first time a person wants to look for a provider or a service, most of the time, if they haven't asked somebody, they're going to be looking at your website. So it's very important that all throughout your website, you have it translated into the most common languages. At the same time, an individual might decide instead of making an appointment through the website, if it's available, they're going to call. So having the option of client services over the phone, answering in different languages is very important. And we also want to do that right at the beginning, right? You don't want to be talking for like 30 seconds and then having the patient not understand anything so they can hear their language and press 3-4 French. So we're going to really have to highlight the possibility of having access to the information on your website and on the phone at the beginning. And when we talk about access, we mean through access, right? So if on your website, it might be translated, it might look great, right? But if there is a chat option or a send as a message option, and then this information is only in English, then you're creating a barrier. So I can look at your site, I can like your services, I want to make an appointment, I might have a question, but I can't click on the chat because the chat is not available on my language. And that right there, it's a barrier. So let's imagine the patient already has the appointment. Now we're going to the appointment and we're going to walk in and we need to get directions. So this, it's a lot places that a lot of individuals don't think about it. We work every day in our same locations. We go in and out without even looking at where we're really working. And this is goes beyond language access. One of the things I always tell participants on my trainings for language access is that I want them to do a little change on their routine. I want them to walk in a different door. So instead of parking at the employee parking lot and going through the back door, I want to one day walk to the front door. And they'll be surprised of all the things they might find. I've heard individuals say, I didn't realize how dirty and disorganized the front entrance is, or I didn't realize there's no signs on how to get a place. And at the same time, I also invite you to try calling your organization. So try to make an appointment with yourself or a coworker and see how many people, how many steps you need to reach to be able to get to yourself or to that person. And then you'll see all the little barriers that you might be putting into your patients. And this is not even about language. We're talking about individuals who already speak English. So in addition to those, you also have to add the language barrier. This is a very interesting topic, and that's why we actually even offer part of our assessment is a walkthrough. So where my team and I go into health organizations and we look at all these things. We walk in as LEPs. We don't speak English. And from the beginning, we can see things like there's no silence. How am I going to get to the x-ray? How am I going to get to the pediatrician for my kid? I don't understand what's around here. I don't speak English. And once I walk and find somebody, right, at the reception and the front desk, is there even a sign there about having interpreters available? Like, how am I supposed to get to your office or to a specific service if there is no signal, if there is no information about the availability of interpreters? So these are some of the things that we looked at the walkthrough. And many times, many, many times, our clients are surprised with the results of that. So yes, I invite you to do a little mini walkthrough from your organization, just in English, and you'll be surprised to see how your organization treats and works with your clients. But let's get back to language access. All right, so we are finally getting into the organization and we figure out how we're going to get there. But before we see the provider today, we're going to do a get a lab, right? We have to go to the laboratory and we're going to have to get labs. And many times labs don't provide language access. They don't provide language services. And can you imagine the fear that so many people have of needles? Let's start with that. So then addition to that, they won't even speak your name. So they won't speak your language. I'm sorry. So they might call you and you go in and, you know, most people will know how to get labs, right? You know, you have to give your arm, they're going to put a needle on it. But still, without any communication, it makes it very, very stressful. It adds to the stress, it adds to the being uncomfortable. And to be honest, we shouldn't really go to a lab or any other service and be told in, you know, sign language to sit there, we're going to put a needle here, you know, without words. It's just a very icky communication situation. And this is not just for the lab. It also happens in other services that are not necessarily seen as the primary encounter between providers and clients. Let's talk about the x-ray. So many times as well, when people go to get an x-ray or a PET scan or an ultrasound, there are no interpreters available. Not to mention the forms, we're going to go there, and the translation part, but there's no interpreters available. And we can't really expect to have every organization provide lab techs or ultrasound techs that speak all these languages. It's not very realistic. So having an interpreter is very important. And I'm going to tell you a very personal example of why this is something that is so personal to me. My mom moved to the U.S. It's going to be almost 5 years now. And she got really sick after a few months of being here. We had to take her to the gastroenterologist. She went to the ER. It was a very iffy situation. She's fine, by the way. But one of the things she had to do, it was she had to get a PET scan. So, of course, I went with her. Of course, I didn't have an interpreter, even though I asked for one. That's a conversation for another day as well. But while she was getting changed, there was a sign in the room that said, if you are wearing underwear like anti-odor, antimicrobial, any special underwear like that, please let us know because this can cause severe burn. And I thought to myself, okay, obviously the sign is here because something happened, right? That's why they put the sign in there because I haven't really seen the sign everywhere either. So there's some liability going on in there that they felt like they had to put that sign. However, they only put that sign in English. And I got really frustrated because I was like, wow, what if I wasn't there? What if my mom had that, right? What if my mom had that underwear and she would have gotten a severe burn in her private area? How frustrating is that? How upsetting is that? And to be honest, that is one of the reasons why I started culturizing access. After that moment, I got so mad. I went to the front desk and I was like, why is this not in Spanish? We are in an area, New Jersey. We're one of the most diverse states. Almost 50% of the population here speaks another language, especially in the area where I am. So many immigrants, and not just Spanish, and you only have this in English. And, you know, obviously the front desk person didn't know anything because it wasn't their fault. I wrote a letter to the health organization explaining all the things they're doing wrong, all these things. And then obviously the COVID pandemic hit, so nothing really has changed from that end. But after that, I was like, this needs to stop. We need to really understand why it's important for us to truly communicate in a cultural and linguistic appropriate manner with our patients. We're talking about safety here, right? And I was like, okay, there's nothing really out there. There is a lot of service providers, of course. There is, you know, interpreters. There are trainings about multiculturalism and other cultures and things like that. But there's nothing really putting all three things together. The provider experience, the interpreter needs, and the patient safety together. So that's really kind of what culturizing is. We are just bridging those gaps and making sure that everybody involved in this triangle of intercultural communication has their need met. So ultimately, we are providing the best patient-centered care. But let's go back into today. Let's continue with the patient journey. So we are now checking in. So we finally got our labs, we got our x-rays, we're going into the check-in process, and we're going to be checking in. And the forms need to be in other languages, right? Because if we really want to make sure the patient is providing the correct insurance, they're really understanding when they're signing you know, any type of authorization, any HIPAA consent, any paperwork, that paperwork that says, yes, I will pay if the insurance is not going to cover. We really want to make sure our patients are understanding this because it's a legal binding document for them. And if it's not in their language, how can we expect them to do this, right? Many times they'll probably just sign because they have to so they can see their provider, but that's not really competent care. Then you go in, and many times once you get in your vitals, there's no interpreter available there. So we use, you know, again, this sign language, right? We tell people we're going to take their blood or we're going to put them in the scale so we can weight them. And all of this is done not in a very smooth way because there's not an interpreter. And a lot of times we use, you know, the provider's broken Spanish, for example, and the patient's broken English so they can communicate in something so basic as getting vitals. See the barriers right there? Finally, we see the provider. Thank goodness, most of the times when language services are provided, there's not many issues there, right? We'll talk about those issues later, but we're going to assume that during the patient and provider visit, this is all normally good for this episode. Then we finish and we are leaving and we get the results, right? Let's talk about my chart. Let's talk about all this patient portal access to patients. And the latest data really shows that patient portal offerings are near universal in the United States. So in 2019, data from the Office of National Coordination for Health IT show that 99% of large hospitals and 97% of all hospitals in aggregate offer patient portal access to patients. However, there are a few issues there. Let's talk about two of them. A 2023 article from Richwine, Johnson, and Patel called Disparities in Patient Portal Access and the Role of Providers in Encouraging Access and Use, reports that Black and Hispanic individuals were offered and accessed patient portals at significant lower rates than white individuals. However, when Black and Hispanic individuals are offered and accessed a portal, they are 12% more likely than white patients to use and download the portal to transmit information. Isn't that amazing? Now, let's talk about language, right? So we finally have access to this portal. Well, many times the portal is maybe in your own language. We're already moving to that. But once you're going to click on my results, your lab results are in English, right? Your history is in English. Your notes from your providers are in English. So it's great that we can, you know, log in and look at a lab result, but we really don't understand any of them because we don't speak English. So big, big barrier right there. So we have all this amazing technology, but we're already not reaching that. Are we almost done with the patient journey? Yes, we are, but not completely. We are going to the pharmacy, right? A lot of the times when we look at language access, we completely forget the pharmacy, especially if it's not inside the health organization. So the patient experience of pharmacy is very, very different, right? And I want to highlight my friend Charlotte Glass from Envision America. I met with her a few months back, and she showed me all the progress and the work they're doing to reduce these language disparities. So one of the things that she showed me is, you know, her script talk. And it's great. You know, the prescription itself in many pharmacies, most of the major pharmacies really by law, are really pretty good at providing, you know, the patient information and the other language. So there's all, you need to take this medication. This is when you can refill. This is the warnings. All that information is here. And in addition to that, they have this really cool thing. At the bottom of your prescription, there is this script talk, and you can really just scan it, and it will literally read your prescription information. So for individuals who are blind or vision impaired, they're able to listen to their prescriptions, or those ones that don't have, you know, they aren't able to read their main language as well. So this is great. And I love this. We'll probably have to do an episode just on pharmacy and on this. So just looking at you, Charlotte. And it's great. However, before you get to your prescription, there's so many barriers, right? The technician or the actual pharmacist might not speak your language, right? And then how do you answer your questions? how many times do we have issues with insurance? The insurance is not being accepted. Or in the case of Latinos, that we have more than one last name if it's not correctly spelled. There is a hyphen, but then the insurance doesn't have the hyphen. Or the provider put the prescription or your second last name, but your insurance has both names. So many things can go wrong with the insurance at the pharmacy, and there are no interpreters available. So it's great that, you know, our prescriptions are coming in our languages, but how do we get them? How do we solve all these issues that can happen before we're able to finally access our prescriptions? So, wow, really? So many details we can cover about where language barriers occur during the patient journey. I just wanted to highlight some of them so really can get you thinking about all these things. Like, what do you do with your job that can be a barrier? How can you solve this language barrier for your patients? And language access means proactively breaking down communication barriers, recognizing diversity and respecting the unique needs of every patient. As you can see, just from the few steps of the patient journey we discussed, it involves a lot of elements that need to be in place to really provide quality language access to our patients. I'm going to summarize a few of them. We have ensuring that written documents, such as consent forms, medical records, and educational materials are available in multiple languages. Providing skilled interpreters before, during, and after medical consultations to facilitate real-life communication between patients and healthcare providers. Utilizing technology to offer telephone or video interpretation services, especially useful during emergencies or when in-person interpretation is just not feasible. Offering phone interpretation for non-English speaking patients when the schedule appointments receive reminders or inquire about their healthcare. But language access also involve other things. They involve educating healthcare professionals and staff. Yes, included the call center and customer finance employees on the importance of language access, cultural competence, and effective communication with diverse patient populations. Employing bilingual staff members who can communicate directly with patients in their preferred language. These employees need to be tested in language skills and medical terminology of both languages before communicating with patients. And this is a whole other episode that we're going to have on just using bilingual staff members. But remember, if you're using them, it's great, but really make sure you're testing them not only on their skill levels in English and their other language, but their medical terminology in both languages. This can be a huge, huge liability for you and your organization. Using plain language in written materials and verbal communication to ensure patients understand their medical conditions, treatment plans, and instructions. Developing programs and services that acknowledge and respect cultural values and needs beyond the domain culture, right? A lot of the times, let's say with nutritionists, right? We really want to give feedback on how to improve our health and things like that. But sometimes we tend to forget the cultural importance of certain foods, right? Like asking, for example, a Mexican patient to not eat tortillas, which is the equivalent of their bread, right? Or Portuguese, we love rice. We eat rice like all the time. So asking us to just cut rice or stop eating bread or tortillas is just not feasible. Culturally, it's a big, big step, right? It's not the same thing as, you know, eat less meat, eat more vegetable. It's not an equivalence. So really understanding that and putting into practice, it's crucial if you really want to see a behavioral change in your patients. Finally, hiring and promoting qualified employees to ensure representation of these communities at all levels, from the facing all the way to the C-suite. We need to be in the table to make these decisions because we bring the values, the culture, and the barriers to the conversation. So make room for these individuals all the way up to the leadership. And let's not forget, equipping health providers with the knowledge, skills to understand and respect cultural differences in healthcare beliefs and practices. As you can see, language access is a multifaceted and requires a conscious effort from the organization and the provider. So now that we understand better what language access is, before we end, let's talk about who needs language access. We'll talk about our myth of the day. All right, so in healthcare, language access isn't a luxury. It's absolute necessity to ensure that every patient has the right to quality healthcare. Language access is not one size fits all solution. It's not something that you can apply equally everywhere. It's about recognizing that diverse communities have diverse language needs, and addressing these needs is essential for equitable healthcare. So who needs language access? Yes, a lot of the times we are talking about immigrants because a lot of the times we're talking about limited English proficient individuals. But this is not the only group of people who needs language access. And before I explain why, let's focus on the majority. The limited English proficient, or LEP, is the most obvious group that requires the services. And they're individuals who have a limited ability to read, write, speak, or understand English, and often do because it's not their primary language. But this doesn't mean they don't speak any English. It just means that they don't speak very well. So it's not at a high proficient level to have important conversations like healthcare conditions or emergencies. And this also doesn't mean that the person has limited intelligence or capabilities. And we mentioned this in the previous episodes, and you will definitely hear me saying this a lot of the times, right? Just because you don't speak English very well or you have an accent doesn't mean that you're not smart. On the opposite, it means you're already speaking another language, right? So this is your second or maybe third or fourth language. So give them a little break and a little praise because they're trying really hard. But just because they're trying very hard doesn't mean that you don't have responsibilities through the law and your ethical responsibility to provide services in their preferred language. So who are the LEPs? According to the U.S. Census, over 26 million people in the United States fall into the LEP category, about 8% of the total population. And according to the KFF, while Latinos make the majority of the LEPs, around 60% of them, Asian people have the highest share of individuals with LEP across racial and ethnic groups. Nearly one in three Asian Americans, approximately 31%, over the age of 5 have LEP, followed by nearly 3 in 10, or around 28% of Hispanics. But LEP individuals are not the only ones benefiting from language access. It extends beyond linguistic diversity. So our next group who needs language access is the deaf and hard hearing community. These individuals, most of them use American Sign Language, interpreters, or other communication methods to crucially have effective communication in healthcare and other areas. This is approximately 15% of U.S. adults who report some trouble hearing. So this has nothing to do with immigration. It has nothing to do with race or anything. We're talking about 15% of adults in the U.S. report having some trouble hearing. So some of the times they'll need language access tools. So ensuring effective communication for this group means having trained professionals who can facilitate sign language interpretation or provide communication assistance tailored to their needs. And a little highlight I want to mention is that you can't assume that every individual who needs sign language needs an ASL. There's also a Black version of sign language. There's a British version of sign language. There's a Spanish. And then when you go into Spanish, there's a Colombian one, there's a Mexican one, there's a Spain one. So just like any other language, it's not a one-size-fits-all. So do keep in mind that and don't just automatically assume that all the deaf and hard-hearing individuals are going to need an ASL. The majority will, but just want to put that a little bit out there. Our next group, blind and visually impaired individuals. So people who are blind or visually impaired also require specialized language access services. This includes providing materials in accessible formats such as Braille or large print, as well as using assistive technologies like screen readings during online interactions. And if you think about it, it's not just patients who benefit on language access. We have the English proficient healthcare providers. Healthcare providers themselves, including doctors, nurses, and support staff, often come from diverse linguistic backgrounds. And even though in an ideal world, we would like to pair every LEP patient with a provider who speaks their primary language and understands their cultural deeper, it's just not possible right now. We don't have enough providers out there for that. But according to Moreno et al.'s article posted in the Family Medical Journal of 2010, 42% of physicians reported having fluency in at least one language other than English. And although the majority of physicians with fluency in Spanish were not Latinos, fluency in Asian languages was primarily restricted to physicians who are of Asian and race and ethnicity. So, effective communication among healthcare teams is essential to ensuring patient safety and quality. And finally, vulnerable and underserved populations. They also are particularly vital for these populations to have language access. This includes refugees, asylum seekers, immigrants, and low-income communities who may face language barriers in addition to other healthcare disparities. Let's talk about Native Americans, especially the older population. Many of them don't speak English well enough to have conversations in English, and they might need an interpreter. And there's many cases of this going wrong. We'll talk about that in another episode. But really, this is not an immigrant or an immigration issue. It's really about serving all the individuals that for a reason or another are not able to get services in healthcare and other areas in English. So, wow, we have covered a lot in the past 30 minutes. But before we end our episode today, Alberto, do we have any questions on the live chat? Let's check. Okay, no, not today. Great. So don't worry. You can still send your questions or comments if you're watching the recording, and we'll address them in our next episodes. And also feel free to send me some ideas for future episodes. What would you like to talk about? Is there a specific area, a specific industry or service that you have questions about? We'll try to make an episode for you coming up soon. We're going to be having some guests. So we'll reach out into other language access providers and experts to learn a little bit more about them and how they're helping, you know, their communities. And of course, if you want to continue the conversation, don't be shy. Connect with me on LinkedIn and let's chat, okay? I can talk language access all day long. So feel free to chat with me and contact me and share. Once again, I want to thank you for joining us today. I'm Joanna Tudela, your host and founder of Culturizing Access, your strategic partner for multilingual patient-centered care. I will see you on the next episode.